Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. October 20th, 1979, an interview with Victor Kwan at his residence in Hollywood. Now, Mr. Kwan, I'd like to follow up with some questions that was not answered in our last, in the interview with Jin Wang we had in July. You mentioned that you had a Chinese tutor.
Oh, I didn't have the tutor. I alone did not have a tutor. My father, we were six boys and four girls in the family, uh-huh. And my aunt has about six or seven children too. So I and my grandfather and my father, you know, they want us to keep a very, want us to know the Chinese language anyway, mm-hmm. and the culture. So therefore, they had a tutor from China.
Right, yeah. And he taught
and
the
whole
group
all
of
you. Us, yes.
Did he teach in Mandarin?
No, it was Cantonese.
I was under the impression you knew Mandarin.
I learned Mandarin after China was recognized.
Oh.
Yes.
Very recently.
Very recently. Ever since Nixon. Well, there's a curious story about that. I was working at CBS at the time.
Uh-huh.
You see. I was in the music department. And then when Nixon went to China, there were many television things going on, news or something. And then they had Chinese people talking, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they said, get Kwan over here. He's Chinese, he should understand. When I went over there, I didn't know what they were talking about.
You couldn't understand Mandarin?
I couldn't understand Mandarin. So I say I get busy. And I went down to Chinatown and asked around in the newspaper, and finally one of them said, there is a group at night that teaches the Chinese Mandarin
mm-hmm.
At a church, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course the idea was really to proselytize, to get people into the church group. So that didn't last too long. But since I had a very good Chinese background, as far as the writing is concerned, you see, the only difference is the pronunciation,
mm-hmm.
see, and also the phraseology. So, however, I found out someone told me that there are some northern people had started a school for children,
mm-hmm.
and because some of the children from like Taiwan and from north of China, and they all begin. Because of television, radio, and motion pictures, they couldn't speak any Mandarin at all. And if they do speak Mandarin, they speak with an American accent,
uh-huh.
you see. So I went there, and then I was the, there were two adults. There was an Occidental, and also another fellow from Taiwan, too, but he was brought up in America, so he couldn't write. He could talk a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned the Bofo, Mofo, and all that. But since I know how to read, and I did always carry a Chinese newspaper, or two of them, you know,
uh-huh.
just to keep up what's going on. So I didn't learn Mandarin until after the Nixon China.
I see. Okay, thank you. And tell me a little bit about your school life in elementary school. And in high school, did you sense any discrimination or any difference in how people treated you in high school, your own peers?
Well, in grammar school, we were located in an area where there's predominantly Chinese. But I would say, not predominantly, but I mean for Oakland it is. It was very close to Chinatown, so we would walk, let me see. We were on 5th Street, and all we had to do was to go up to 10th Street, only 5 blocks away, you see. But then, however, that school, I would say, perhaps 20% Chinese. There weren't that many Chinese.
And the rest were?
Yeah, and
whites?
The rest were Occidental, yes. And there were Jewish people. I remember there was a Jewish brother sat next to me.
How
and
did they
there weren't any blacks, it's funny.
Any.
No blacks at that time. Until I went to high school,
Mm-hmm.
In high school, I mean, there were in my classes, I remember, there were some blacks, but in all of my classes, there were only about two or three blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Oakland High School.
Uh-huh.
And that was the old Oakland High where Jack London, they always pounded into our head, is that Jack London High School.
Went there. How were you treated in
very
elementary
fine.
School?
I mean, but however, because of our, we were treated well, you know, because we don't, let's put it this way. When we wake up, a daily activity for us. In the morning we get up, we have breakfast, and then we go to school. And this is my watch. And then at noon, we usually come home, five blocks come home for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mother is of the old family style. I will show you her picture. She had bound feet, you know, you can imagine that old fashioned. So what happened is that there's a lady that cooks for us, and then we eat our lunch. And then the reason why we do that is that at the moment school is out, about 3:15, you know, at 4 o'clock, we go to Chinese school and stay there until 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And then my father, being a doctor, he would come home around 8, and then they have dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So we did not have much activity like with the other boys, going out and play games or play baseball or some such thing.
What about recess?
Recess, then we would go out on the playground and play around the rings and the bars and things like that.
Did you play with Chinese or Americans?
Yeah, we had Chinese. I had very nice American friends. I still, as a matter of fact, a couple of them I knew from grammar school, and he became a drummer in Horace Heights band, and I stayed close to him until Horace, you don't probably don't even know who Horace Heights is.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be probably.
Now, you said you played with both American and Chinese
yes.
kids, but
mm-hmm.
And you just mentioned that you were not invited to the American kids'
well, they
houses.
Yeah, I think as I said, Bill's, I went to Bill's home because he sat near me, you know, so therefore we were friendly, and it just was friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a set of drums. He was even playing drums very well then. And then he invited me home to his home to look at his drum.
He was Jewish, did you say?
No. There's another fellow named Jewish, named Horowitz.
Ah.
And he was in... His parents had a shop, and it was right near Oakland High School.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one that, he also sat near me. And I would go to his shop and buy cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, his
his parents would say,
cookies.
Oh, hello, how did you come in?
Uh-huh.
And allow me to go back there. But then was not really a chummy friendship, at least.
Mm-hmm.
I always had been curious about other things, you know, I'm not a curious person. So I did converse with them and went into other home, but not a regular friend, as it were.
Mm-hmm. So, and what about in high school?
That was high school.
In high school in general, did you socialize with Chinese or Americans?
I would say when we were in high school, by that time, every summer we would go over to Him Sung Chair, you know, because...
Him?
To the store.
Ah, yes, the store, yes.
So, because you see, it was father. That used to be the old way in the old days, you see, when you grow up, you go into your father's business or the business he owns and stay around the business.
So you didn't...
No, from then on, as a matter of fact, right after that, I became very engrossed in Him Sung Chung, in the store, because I used to, they had a great deal of business. I used to type out the envelopes and things like that, because they had a whole network of Chinese stores. Actually, Him Sung Fat is the one in Canton.
Mm-hmm.
And then Him Sung Long is the one in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Him Sung Cheung is the one in San Francisco. And then the San Francisco store is the one that would have the, I remember typing letterheads and envelopes to Tahiti,
mm-hmm.
Madagascar, and there were Chinese all over, and Calexico, Havana.
Chinese letters or
well,
English
there's
letters?
There's Chinese letters, but the envelope was
uh-huh.
yeah, and they were all people from the same village, and when they do go back to China, they always would pass through the store because in those days they were went to China in the President line. I mean, we went by ship. You know,
uh-huh.
Yes, you know.
And did you get a BA from Berkeley, or did you just go there for a few months?
No, I. What happened is, when, like I said, I was very curious. I did not get a BA. As a matter of fact, I didn't even go to Cal until after I went into the recording business in 29.
Mm-hmm.
29. And then at that time I knew I had to learn about music.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over there and tried to go to the night classes and to study this, you know. Because I was very schooled, I was totally a Chinese, they used to have a phrase in the old ways, you know, where they would say, oh, he's Him Sung Cheung, Hai Ji Ye, you know, in other words, said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were very much concerned about it, like my oldest brother and the other brother too, we all went through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then came time, when we started the record company, and I found out that after they broke up, record company, you know, I mean, with 17 records going into China, and I had to do something. I said, gee, I better learn the business, you know.
Okay.
But when I went into there, in order to survive in the business, I mean, the business of recording,
mm-hmm.
I had to do the American way of things, you know. And that's where it was a very, it was almost like a dichotomy. I'm 50% Chinese, and I had to really catch up the American side. I can read and write and all that, you know, but the culture and everything is totally Chinese.
So you went to Berkeley Extension.
I had the Berkeley Extension.
And you, did you ever go to college?
Well, I went, I mean, you might consider that not formally as going into college.
Mm-hmm.
I took college that way, picking it up afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what got you started in the record business in 29?
In 29, what happened is before 29, in 1927, when I graduated high school, immediately he went over to look after dad's business. You know, that was the old Chinese way.
Mm-hmm.
In 27, I graduated
right,
high school.
Right, and what got you switched from your dad's business to
yeah.
record?
What happened is there was a very famous star from China, and the records were selling at the store
for three dollars, all depends.
His records were selling for $4. His name was Bob Kerwin, you know. He's very well known. He's like a Sinatra, you might say, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the regular records were between $3 and $3.50. They were made in Germany. Made
right.
by Germans
right.
and went
yes.
to Germany and then went back to Hong Kong and then to
mm-hmm.
America.
And, that's what they
and why I was at the store, I would say, why do that? The records at that time was only selling 75 cents.
So you wanted
cents.
to
record it.
Record it
and
yourself.
I went to a Brunswick record. And the
you went to what?
Brunswick Record Company.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because
in
I went Oakland? To Victor. No, I went to Victor and Columbia, and they wouldn't listen to us. And you know, they think, oh, what is Chinese? I mean, what the heck do they know about records? You know?
Yeah, excuse me. Were there a lot of Chinese who were buying these
$4
records?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And that's a lot of money.
Yes, indeed. But that's the only thing they have, the only entertainment they have. And from China, you see.
Did he sing Chinese opera?
Oh, completely Chinese opera.
Oh. And,
You know, it's a Cantonese version of the Peking opera.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, that's how you got started
mm-hmm.
with it.
I was so involved with it, that's why I even went on the stage myself, on the Chinese stage.
Doing what?
Playing, singing and playing.
The costumes and the
mm-hmm.
whole thing?
The whole thing.
Did you have to?
We're very, very Chinese. I mean, the whole family. Oh, I must add this. My grandfather was an entrepreneur in the old days, before my mother's time. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was what they call banju, you know, it's the proprietor.
Of
an
opera group.
Yeah. He was the Wong, and he had the head of the Wong Association and things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's my grandfather. I probably never knew him because he passed on before.
Yeah. Tell me, what was Hollywood like when you came here?
Oh, when I first came here, I came through via this record company. Now this record company...
Brunswick?
Yeah. No, not Brunswick. McGregor, you see that? C.P.
Yes.
McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, C.P. McGregor was the man that I contacted. And he said, in our contract, you must buy, he was working for Brunswick, you must buy 3,000 records a year in our contract.
What do you mean buy?
Buy from, I mean, they're going to manufacture
a manufacturer,
uh-huh. Yeah, you see, which means we have to buy that many
right.
records at least.
And you
before
bought 10,000, I think.
3,000.
Right, but you ended up that
and
year
within, after the first batch of records we made, it was 100,000.
You bought?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's the reason why the year following it grew up like mushroom, you know. I mean, 17 companies started to get
in China.
Record.
You got the Chinese man, the guy who sang the opera
yeah.
to come to America to record.
No, he was already here. That's how.
Oh, he was already here.
Already here, and his record was selling for $3 to $4 as well as his record.
Did you also export his records back to China?
Yes. We not only that, we went back to Hong Kong to record, you know, to the other famous opera stars too.
Oh, by the way, who's we? You and your brother?
Well, I mean the company did, because I was still at the store. My brother didn't.
You said you formed your own company?
Yeah, Him Sung Chung formed a branch company, a subsidiary, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
called Yun Dong Gongsi, Far East. And then what happened is because we started, we made the success, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody jumped in the game. And by that time, the Japanese went into Manchuria, and
yes.
Shanghai fell, and then the whole thing was gone. And then I was here I am without the record company, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that we didn't expect it to be bad at that time, you know, that China would fall. And then I would say, I'd better learn how to record. And that's when, and McGregor also was supposed to have, for every record he sells, he gets 5 cents, a commission, you know, from the company. And then he got so angry at Brunswick because Brunswick cut him out.
Why did you come to Los Angeles?
Well, and then I went to work for him to learn the recording business,
mm.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then...
McGregor.
And by that time, the recording business of recording in China is very remote. And he was recording transcriptions of radio programs.
Mm-hmm. And he was located in Los Angeles?
No, he was in San Francisco.
Oh.
So when he came down, because we were making plays, the recording, you know, all the plays and things like that,
mm-hmm.
Radio plays, you know, and, you know, those serial things. So I went with him came down with him to Los Angeles.
Oh.
That's 1930. I started with him in 1929,
mm-hmm.
and I moved down here in 1936 because there were the center of show business is Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
There are more actors here than San Francisco, actually. Okay. So that's how I came, and then I went to study dramatics.
Okay.
I went to study music at the Los Angeles Conservatory, and I became a producer and a director. And that's how I've become
a radio. Not talk
shows. Oh yeah, the talk shows, musical shows, anything.
Uh-huh.
You produce everything, you know, you direct everything. In radio, the producer and the director are combined.
Mm-hmm. Then you associated mostly with non-Chinese.
I found at that time, they were very funny. At one time when I came down here, I said, all this literature, Chinese literature that I learned pounding in my head were absolutely no use at all. Absolutely no use at all. But it didn't bother me, you know, because what it did give me is a philosophy, you might say, how to handle people. How
did it work with Americans when you apply Chinese philosophy?
I certainly do, because here I am, well, take even at CBS, under me there were two doctors of philosophy, doctor of music, three master of music. And I have a music degree from LA Conservatory in terms of like the, you know, but not like what they are. They came from Juilliard and all that. And I'm their boss.
I see. How did you get along with Americans in general?
Wonderful.
Did you prefer Americans over Chinese?
Well,
No.
I would say this. I'm very single-minded. When I came down here, I knew that what I had to do, but in order to get ahead, I mean, I just have to be a little better than they are, you know, brighter than they are, more capable than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, in the business of creative arts, I mean, they're slightly neurotic people, you know. And I might add, amongst those people that I talk about, out of seven employees, four of them were going to a psychiatrist.
Uh-huh.
And these were brilliant people.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I mean, that's when the Chinese background came into play. Because...
specifically when?
Like Confucius, Zhong Yong. Zhong Yong.
Middle of the road.
Yeah, in other words, you keep a balance. Actually, Zhong Yong means you stay on the balance.
Oh.
So you see why. You don't fall into the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
Creative people go into the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
Since I do know about the creative processes and the difficulty,
mm-hmm.
that's how they... Well, I started in as a music supervisor for Gunsmoke, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when the headman found that I was, or particularly that I was a major, that I could run things, you know, he put me in charge, and then these people.
Then you were not discriminated against in terms of getting responsibilities?
No, I wasn't. Because there's another peculiar thing here. Because I would say show business, motion picture business, and radio business is basically Jewish people.
Mm.
And the Jewish people are very much, their culture is very much like the Chinese in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And so since they are discriminated against,
mm-hmm.
it gives them great pleasure to have someone that's even more discriminated than they are.
I see.
And they, I'm their pet, so to speak. You know.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, when I first went into, first applied for, it was very funny, because the general came by, in order to explain why they need my services, is that this gentleman, I mean, a man named Vogel, and he's Jewish, and his father was a producer, and he owns skating rinks, you see.
Right.
And, And then what he did, he had me record. And now in those days, the recording is that once you make a mistake, you have to start all over again. And the
and you figured out a way to splice it.
Yes, that's it, you see. I say, you don't have to. I'll be letting him make a mistake, but make another continue.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did is I ran two of them together on a record, and then redo and make one into it. So he was the one that went to bat for me. When I applied for it, the army didn't take me. They wouldn't. And they had all kinds of excuses. You see, to begin with, they would say, oh, they didn't know that I was Chinese.
You couldn't tell from your last name?
No, because they, it could have been Spanish or something. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is the Major Fogo came in and he said, we need his services. There are two of us. The other one was an American. We were good friends that were able to do this sort of thing. So what happened, they gave us $100 a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day the general came by, and went to look at what's going on. He said, you mean he's doing that? This kid, And then he said, throw him into the army. And then this Jewish man, he said, nothing doing. He said, you give him the commission or else. So I made out all the papers, sent to Washington, rejected.
Uh-huh.
And then he went
to
that.
What was the reason?
Well, all kinds of reasons, like he can go through the regular channels and get promoted into the position. And so what is...
They didn't want to give you a commission?
No.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And probably because you were Chinese.
Yes, I think so. Not only that, I remember distinctly because in order to make a recording, you need all kinds of raw materials, like metals,
mm-hmm.
and vinylite,
mm-hmm.
and shellac, and things like that. You see, these are... And then I would go back to Washington to try to clear the amount of the shellac that we would be using. So by going back there, we would sometimes put me on a commercial plane. But oftentimes I would go on the army plane. And one time when I was coming home from Washington, and they were bucket seats, you see, and they were GIs there. And I sat down next to one of them. But this guy promptly stand up and walk away. And I looked, he was a colonel. And I said, oh, I'm up against one of those again.
But is the colonel below?
No, the colonel is higher, way up, you see. Yeah, way up. He's got the eagles, And so later on, he went to look it up, what was my papers, In other words, who bought the army transport?
At that time, you were already a commissioned officer.
Oh, yes, I was already.
How did you get to be a commissioned officer finally?
Finally, this man, Fogo, said, we need him. He said, oh, he told me to stop working.
Fogo?
Yeah, Fogo is his name. Major Fogo.
And who?
He's the man that. He was the one with the skating rink. The one who I worked for that I made the music for.
And the one.
Yeah, and he was the one that recommended me to be able to splice out the commercials from the recordings, you see.
Mm.
Yeah, four pieces.
So finally he got you.
And he got me the commission. In other words, he fought for me.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, when I was out of the army and we were going into television, I was still with McGregor, but I wanted to go into television because that's a newer thing. Only radios had its day. And another Jewish man, went to CBS, and then he helped me. He put me into the music.
When you got these, when you ran into this kind of racial discrimination, did you feel sorry that you were a Chinese?
Well, I would say it's it wasn't pleasant, that I said, another problem to solve. But I think being Chinese, or the way we were brought up, or the way I understand from the classics, you see, that particularly like the Ding and Li Jing and things like that, that inevitably, I can't talk, I have a soft spot in my mouth, canker cell.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that you will have problems, you see. In other words, it's like day and night, a yum year, you know. So if it's a yum problem, then you just simply try to overcome the difficulty.
So you didn't feel sorry
for
yourself?
No, no. The only thing that I felt that I say, oh, all that time I was school into all these this classic, and go over to father's store and to, you know, to take over
stuff
and all that, and then the whole thing changed, and I'm totally unprepared, as it were, you know, and had to go through and pick up the education that is necessary.
Did you feel more like, well, more Chinese or more American in those days in Hollywood?
I think I, of course, I'm very Chinese when I go back and go home. But while
when
I'm
here,
show business is a continuing business. So I really jump into it, you know,
mm-hmm.
totally.
Does that mean that
so
you?
I would say the only thing that my only Chinese part would be that I had a sister that married into a family that was here, and I associate with them.
Mm-hmm.
You see. And they like me because I know all the Chinese things, you know, and all that. And they enjoy me very much,
and
I enjoy them.
Chinese
with
them?
With them, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But particularly with the elderly folks, you know, and they enjoy that. But the moment I'm back in the job, I mean, there were times when we had, you know, show business is a constant thing, you know. I have tapes in case I don't know. So I would say my daily activity and even my active social life were with the people that were working there. And I know that was part of it that was necessary. And then we used to go home very often too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, I mean, once a month we would drive our cars and go up to Oakland.
You and your sister?
No, my brother.
Oh, he was down here too. Did you live with your brother?
We lived together for a while, and when he got married, he had his place, and then I moved into Hollywood.
Oh, did you ever get married?
I was married once, but it didn't take them, and that was it.
With Chinese?
With Chinese, yeah.
I see.
Because that was from a former kind of a life anyway, from my San Francisco, from the San Francisco life, you know, and it was someone in the, and then we didn't quite hit it off, and so.
No, true. Did you date any Americans?
Some, but not serious. Nothing serious. I just didn't find it necessary. Did you ever see the motion picture Shane? You didn't, huh? Well, Shane was played by a fellow named Alan Ladd, and he's sort of.
Oh, yeah, Alan Ladd.
Yeah.
He was in Time
Magazine,
right? Oh,
no, that's Alan Alda.
Oh, excuse me. Alan Ladd.
Alan Ladd is.
That name sounds very familiar for some reason. I'm sorry. Can't play.
Well, anyhow, I mean, he played this Shane part where he's totally free, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I feel.
How long did your marriage last?
Actually, it wasn't long. I mean, not even a year. Just totally, we suddenly found that we had great barriers. The fact that I've been down here so long and it was something else. She thinking something and I was thinking something else.
Do you think it was the barrier between, say, American, your American way of thinking and her basically Chinese way of thinking?
It could be that. That has a lot to do with it. And also, some of it were the person too. The person was a very demanding type of person. Demanding, I would say she would feel insecure if you stop pursuing what you really are intent. You know, it's that kind of a person. But that you don't, because she was someone from my family's friend, you know, my mother's friend and all that. And by that time, it was so far apart that it didn't mean anything.
How does your family feel about your career when you first started it, and i.e. the radio, the
well,
business?
I mean, they're very positive about it, mm-hmm. particularly proud of me when I went into army, and there was
mm-hmm.
not many Chinese officers in those days.
So,
yeah.
So would you say your friends in those days and continue into now are mostly Americans?
Yes, I would say so. We're close friends. Except my family. You know.
Your father was an herbalist,
yeah.
Right? So when you get sick, when you were a kid, I presume you got Chinese medicine, right?
Oh, yes. I know certain medicine, too. You said you got to go. I said, well, I'll take care of you.
You still use that?
I'm in very minor things, you know, like, I suppose, colds and coughs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my father was teaching my older brother, and I can even recite them, you know. You see, the Chinese way of studying is that you recite the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the different kind of medicine.
That's
really coming into play now these days. It's a surprise how it's going full circle. As a matter of fact, they even translated I went to China last year, you know, for the very first time. Actually, I've never been to China, or been to the Orient at all until I retired.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that there were many things, particularly in China. I mean, I really enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm. When did you stop sort of getting, well, I presume it was a gradual move away from Chinese medicine. You started taking more American
well,
medicine.
No, even when I was in San Francisco, I'm an omnivorous reader. I mean, I read anything, you know, just. So when I remember I had a very bad sore throat, you know, and they gave me certain medicines and all that, and I broke inside. I know this is tonsillitis, and I just simply tell my mom, I say, I'm going to, my father was not totally, you know, he's very amenable to American and Western medicine too.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a Dr. Swaller, which is a family friend of mine. I said, I've got to go see Dr. Swaller, you know, and I said, is this tonsillitis? And she said, yes. She said, it's pretty bad.
Did you say she?
It's she, it's a woman.
Oh.
Yeah. And so she said, well, I think we better take it out, you know. So we had an operation.
How old were you?
Sixteen, seventeen.
Mm-hmm. What about things like recreation? What sorts of things did you do for fun in your
you mean nowadays
late,
or then?
Yeah, late teens and
The late teens were very, very Chinese, very Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
I was with the Chinese association, the music association, Baiyongkang, things like that,
mm-hmm.
and I was sing and play.
In San Francisco?
Yeah, in San Francisco. Yeah. And there was a Chinese literary poetry and things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I even dabbled in that. You know. So it was totally, I would say from childhood all the way through 20. Through 29,
mm-hmm.
I was totally Chinese, very Chinese.
Well, what happened at 29, you came to Hollywood?
No, I didn't come to Hollywood. At 29, I worked for McGregor. I'm 1937, 37, 36, 36, 37, I came to Hollywood.
Right, you're in 1936, you were 28, and in 37, you were 29, so does that, the fact that you came here,
I really made the change. The change really, I begin to feel I have to make the change at 29.
Oh.
Because I begin to work for McGregor, you see,
uh-huh.
and to learn the business.
I see.
But still, I went home and I stayed at home. and until when he made greater company. You see, he was starting the company in order to have me to go back to China to record,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to have that bonanza of Chinese records again.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, of course, it didn't happen.
Because of
yeah,
Japanese.
Right. But then by that time, the radio was flourishing
mm-hmm.
in the business. Yeah.
So he got you into
so,
radio?
Oh yeah, he hired me, you know, and I was the only one. As a matter of fact, I even got my brother into the business, and we both moved down here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see.
And then I had to really gear myself into total, it's almost like a new childhood, you might say, on my own, you know. Really something. But then I never, the old culture, I still, that's why I still have all the old books in there. And it was so beautiful and so wonderful, I never saw it as being a negative thing. The only thing I said, oh my God, I have learned a whole new way of life.
What did you feel was the greatest difference between the Chinese way of doing things and the American?
Well, I mean, the Chinese way was very relaxed. In reality, it's very precise, but it looks on the surface is very imprecise.
Mm-hmm.
See? And then also, the only thing that keeps them from being imprecise is what we were talking about, Zhongyu and all that. You know, that is a lot of the Chinese weren't educated. You know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them weren't, and so there was an elitist system there, definitely. Because I remember when, because my parents were the one that owned the store, and they treated us differently, and the people, in those days, they were actually the people, 打杂, you know what 打杂?
Yes.
打杂, you know, they wait on us hand and foot, you know,
mm-hmm.
very funny. And it was not very democratic at all.
You ordered them around?
You can. And I never really feel comfortable because I knew, because you see, there's the Western part and you begin to know about it now. And you also understand that it was so difficult to understand that there are so many, at that time it was say man man, tong bao,
mm-hmm.
you see.
Yeah.
And then you know, I say, gee, we must need a lot of food. We know about food. We are reading Chinese paper in those days, and they were about Stalin and things like that. And also people who were being kidnapped and all that, and how some of them had their mind and weren't able to cope with it because they were uneducated. And I know all about the rich people were able to buy into the examinations. You know,
are you now talking about the difference between Chinese and American? Or?
No, I'm talking about describing the Chinese of that period.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But
the difference, as far as difference, ultimately, what makes, whether it's Chinese or American, is the one who holds on to an idea
mm-hmm.
to do things.
Is that Chinese?
Yeah. Is that either Chinese or American? Either. They both do. Like, for instance, right now, the American way is from competition is carried to a very extreme thing. In other words, look at the highest paid people are like the ball games and all that, you know.
Don't you think Chinese are competitive?
Chinese in nowadays are getting competitive. But before they weren't. They couldn't afford it. Unless you are, it was so corrupt.
But you mentioned there were 17 record companies that sprang up. That must be competition.
There's competition of Japanese, French, and American, several American companies.
Oh, among that 17?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I see. I thought they were all Chinese.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
Japanese, I mean, they were really, they're the closest. They had the machinery.
But they were in China.
Yeah, they were in China.
When you were in Los Angeles, did you join any Chinese social organizations?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have the time, really.
for your sister and your brother and your sister's husband's family the only Chinese you came into contact with?
No. There were some Chinese friends, you know. I would say, basically, like down where I go down to eat, the restaurant,
uh-huh.
and they would become friends, because you see, the Chinese, they run into family associations, and so if someone was like that family that talked about, when he got married, you know, we just knew the fact that I went down there to eat,
mm-hmm.
and he's saying Lao Fan Zhengzi, you know. So, do you know that? Or the Seisheng, do you know that? The Four Families Association.
Uh-huh, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're friends, you know. But then I just moved, when you go
was
down there.
Was there a Quan Family Association there?
No, I mean, it's all in the Four Families.